Hello and welcome to Game Rarer, the show with many legs, many wiggling legs, and many participants in this fine voice call. As always with me, I have the lovely David. How are we doing today, David?
Doing well. I just noticed that apparently Sony are working with people who worked on the PS2 emulator to get the PS2 games on the PS5. Much like that, I am working to put something good out of my mouth today. Whether that works or not, I don't know.
It would be good to have some games on PS5, I do agree. That's usually a perk for a console. And who do we have joining us today?
If my internet works this time, I'm Kit. Hello.
Hello, Kit from the craggy moorlands of Scotland. Is that an expression?
I mean,
craggy moorlands.
Like,
do you know anyone called craggy moorlands?
Maybe I might have gone to school with them. I mean, I think that goes a little more northern than I am, but sure.
Perhaps. Scotland is a large country, they say.
I suppose Glasgow roads are similar to a craggy moorland, so it works.
I appreciate your civility. Kit and I go back to, like, uni days, and they can attest to me wanting to start a podcast of similar stature to this for quite a bit. So it's all of those things where it felt like, the right thing to do to have them on for an app. So as always, I'm going to start out with sort of our week in gaming. How have you been doing, Kit? What have you been up to?
Well, I just finished Persona 3 Reload after about, I'd say, a month of playing it, maybe. Very, very good remake. Basically took the best parts of all of their many iterations of that game and just made like the perfect version of it, I would say.
Yeah.
It's also very nice to see it with a fresh coat of paint. And it's nice for the dungeon section to be, you know, engaging, because it wasn't in the original, I'll say that. Even, like, I think I played Portable not long ago as well, and that I never finished it because it was just too painful to get through.
It was weird that they brought that version back when they did all the remasters, I thought.
I mean, I understand why. It was a version where you could play as the female protag and stuff. And I think because it came later than FES, it made, like, a lot of positive changes too, so it was the best version that existed.
Yeah.
That didn't make it, like, fun to play in the year 2023. So it's nice to have a version that is engaging for a new audience, as well as, you know, those who played it originally. And also they did just announce the DLC recently, which is nice, which is the extra stuff from FES. So looking forward to that.
Yeah, so I was hearing Atlus do like doing that. I was seeing Shin Megami Tensei 5 had like its special edition like revealed or whatever, where they had like a bunch of new story content. Ooh. People seem to get blindsided by it like every time, even though it apparently happens for every game that Atlus does. They do their like deluxe version. They did like Royale for Persona 5. David, what have you been up to?
So, like, I could talk about, like, I started Wind Waker, but I haven't, like, played Wind Waker that much, if that makes sense. I kind of want to talk about something that isn't something I played, but something I watched. So the Oscars just happened. That just happened. And did that just happen? One of the best, wasn't one of the best, let me tell you. One of the winners for best animated short feature was called I'm gonna say what it's called because I need to see how much you know about this. So the winner of best animated short was animated in Unreal Engine, and when it won, the filmmakers had to thank Epic Games, and it's very strange.
Right. You like, mentioned this. Epic Games for what was it that actually won? Do you remember? Mm-hmm.
It was called. And this is like I was trying to watch it like, as much as I could, and I said like, I'll unlock this one after it's only like 10 minutes long. It's called War is over. I think it's called War is Over, inspired by the music of John and Yoko.
Uh-oh.
Now you hear that and you say, oh, well, that sounds kind of thing. It's a short set during World War II. Is it World War II? No, it's World War I. It's one of the wars. And basically, it's like this guy playing chess against like an enemy soldier, and they're swapping like their moves via like carrier pigeon. And one of the guy's superiors finds out, and he's like, you know, he's admonishing the guy for, you know, you're communicating with the enemy, you can't do that. So they all go onto the battlefield, and they're all fighting. And it might be World War II, actually. The order comes in to surrender, and like everyone stops fighting, but one like shoots one of the pigeons, and the pigeon gets shot. And like I'm not joking here. Pigeon gets shot. Pigeon comes on the battlefield, and immediately, fucking the entirety of War is Over. The John Lennon Christmas song plays as they all mourn the pigeon, and they all look at each other like, "What have we done? We've killed this pigeon." And that's the entire short. And it's animated in Unreal Engine. It looks like Fortnite. It won Best Animated Short. John Lennon's really annoying kid, Sean Ono Lennon, came up on stage, was like, "Thanks, guys, you know, and can we all wish a happy Mother's Day to Yoko Ono?"
Oh, my mom. God.
So they spent like, everyone in the front row was just screaming, like, "Happy Mother's Day, Yoko!" This is right after they said thank you to Epic Games for helping us make this film.
It was all leading up to hearing from Jazz Jackrabbit to Gears of War, all those Fortnite seasons. I was going to say, because I finally actually sat down and watched The Amazing Digital Circus earlier this week. You know, that pilot that went like crazy viral and everyone was talking about. And that was in Unreal. So I was like, wait, did that get... It got nominated for an Annie, I'm seeing, but not an Oscar. Lazy Town was in Unreal Engine as well, like Unreal Engine 3 or something.
There was a short documentary that won, I think, either a year or two ago. That was like, I think it was like a Medal of Honor tie-in or something.
It was a Medal of Honor machinima.
it was like something. I can't remember what it was. It was one best short documentary, and it was like made by a video game company to like promote like on their games.
Oh,
it was
about, like, cool.
It was about someone like surviving the Holocaust or something. It was it was like some war thing, but it was a really felt like a really weird thing for them to be promoting, because it felt kind of weird, like icky to be like, "Here's a really serious subject, now go play our game." I gotta check what that was, because that really... Oh, it was called Colette, and it was...
That does sound familiar.
It was co-produced by Oculus and Respawn Entertainment as part of the documentary gallery for the virtual reality video game Medal of Honor Above and Beyond.
What the fuck? I didn't even realize they'd... Oh, God. So they've done a new Medal of Honor game?
VR. Or is this a few... This is 2020 that this game...
VR... There's a VR exclusive Medal of Honor game? Oh, this is like... This is mind-melting. This is so many levels.
It got a 60... It says as a 67 on Metacritic, so, you know, it's up there.
Sure, it's in the upper third, I guess, by default.
It won the Oscar as well, so, you know.
Well, good for them. I was sharing this with David earlier, but there was also, speaking of the Oscars, there was a great video of the Irish state broadcaster RTE going around Cillian Murphy's Cillian Murphy, sorry. That'll be Killian me for saying it wrong. Wah, wah. And they're just interviewing all these kids, and it's like, I was saying this in some other places, but it's great that the kids are getting like more and more excited as they're going around. I really want to just like some guy to just come in and be like, "You haven't seen the film, you don't understand the themes." Like, write me an essay about Oppenheimer right now, fake fans. Oh, it was so good though. I mean, David was saying that the head teacher was like the most Irish guy he'd ever seen. Just immediately being like, all the kids from all the years were coming in and they were talking to me, and they were like, "Have you heard the news, sir?" He's like, "Oh, what news now?" It's like, it's so like pleasant. Oh, I love it. I seriously love it.
Sounding like a missing Father Ted character, honestly.
Seriously, seriously. My week in gaming has been about as erratic as it usually is. Panic had a big sale on the Playdate store to celebrate the first anniversary of like that launching. So a bunch of games went on discount for the first time. And I went into a bit of a haze and I bought 14 games.
Oh my god.
In my defense, most of them were under £3 and also a lot of them were on my like list already. But now I'm like sat here with this gigantic stack where I'm like, I'm sated. I have so much. A couple of highlights I wanted to mention. Previous alumnus of the cast, P Racing. That's P Racing, which is like crazy ambitious for what it is. It's like this sort of Mode 7 style kart racing game, but it has like missions and they just added a mode where you entirely steer with the crank. I do need to fiddle with the sensitivity because it's like insanely twitchy. It's like I breathe on my thumbnail and it's like the car goes like spinning out of control. And then I've also been playing Under the Castle, which is a sort of like roguelike, which has just been like completely kicking my ass. But that's like, that's what a good roguelike should do. So, but yeah, I think with us all caught up on our week, it'll be a good point to launch into the first segment.
So before I begin this whole like spiel I have, because I'm still kind of debating whether to open it with like a really bad Stanley impression, because that's how the game opens. I've got my finger over the big button that says bad Stanley impression. My brow is sweating, you know. I'm like really, really conflicted. Before I do any of that, I want to ask both of you what kind of this is a really like interview question. What kind of Spider-Man experience and knowledge do either of you have?
I don't mind going first. So,
oh, Frank, you've got more to say than me.
Yeah, I had a feeling. I've played the more recent ones, and I have like a really foggy memory of maybe playing one or two of the PS1 ones, probably at some sort of like crash or something. In the same way I experienced the original Rayman, I played it in a crash.
That's very good.
I think the same thing happened with Spider-Man, so I don't remember very much.
I have a core memory of being checked into a hospital when I was like 7 or 8, because I had like asthma, and at the children's ward they had like an old PS1 of the like Monsters Inc. game. And I just remember like bouncing around as like Mike, and then like I had to get checked out of the hospital. And I was like, no, I want to play more of the Monsters Inc. game. This is cruel, you're ripping it away from me. I had to go back to my boring Xbox. Oh, hate it here. Spider-Man does strike me as a good crash find, a good dentist waiting room experience.
Oh, for sure, because I mean, you could just, well, fuck around, basically. You don't have to achieve anything in those games.
Very true. What were your thoughts on the more recent games? Because I remember you got really into the 2018 one. Have you played Spider-Man 2? Or
I've played all of the PS4 Spider-Men. I was going to say Spider-Men.
The plurals.
I mean, there are Spider-Men in the games.
True, true.
So I'm not wrong, but yeah, I've played all three of them, and they are all pretty excellent games, honestly. Spider-Man 2 is a little short. I thought people were exaggerating about it. It is a very good, succinct experience, but it was very short, I'll say that much.
Interesting. How was Miles Morales? Because I don't remember people talking about that much at all.
It struck me as feeling like, you know how when Splatoon 2, spoiler, came out, and it felt kind of like DLC for the original Splatoon, I guess, or at least I think I said as much to you.
Oh, like a small refresh, like in a new
yeah,
box.
Yeah, that's kind of how Miles Morales felt to me in a way. I enjoyed it. It's a great game as well, but again, just pretty short. It felt like it could have potentially been added on, or, you know, it's like a good half step between those two, but that one of all of them felt the most sort of, I guess, in between.
Yeah, That was the point where they like changed the model of the Spider-Man in game to make him look more like Tom Holland.
Oh, yeah.
I believe like they did the remaster alongside. What are your thoughts on that? What are your thoughts on Puddlegate as well? I don't know if you remember that, where people were comparing screenshots of Spider-Man on PS4 pre-release, and they were like, the puddles aren't as reflected in the final game. There's no puddles in this area, and people were like forgetting that like there's different weather conditions. And stuff. That's just always what I'm sorry, like those games are great, but no. That is just like the first thing I think of, the changed Tom Holland head and Puddlegate.
The changed Tom Holland head was something.
Yeah.
I could give that a miss, maybe. I wouldn't call Frogmouth Holland my favorite Spider-Man, but it's alright.
I mean, the suit is good. I've heard people say the PlayStation Spider-Man suit is like one of their favorites. People were very happy when it showed up in across the Spider-Verse. That was the second one, right? Yeah,
that suit is pretty solid. Like, that's a good design. Mm. And the sort of Spider-Man 2 iteration is pretty fun as well.
Yes. I mean, oh god, yeah, I remember people were really hounding them to add the Sam Raimi suit.
Oh yeah.
And then when they finally got it, we were all just sort of like, you didn't deserve this. Can they patch it out? You don't deserve the light
you
of this.
You do not deserve this holy grail of an item.
Yeah. I will say it's a hell of a tangent, but I think it was that obsolete Sony page on Twitter was posting something where it was Sony using the Spider-Man font for something yet again, which did just make me think about that, like, just how, I mean, that even today with like Madam Web and stuff, like how connected Sony are with Spider-Man, and just like how inexplicable it feels. Because I mean, David, you might be able to fill me in on this. It's like Marvel went through a bit of a time in the 90s, and they were selling a lot of their stuff off, and that's how Sony got the film rights. And like, and then X-Men obviously ended up with Fox, and
Universal got Hulk and Namor,
and
Universal I think still kind of have, like, the reason that like Marvel can't make a Hulk solo film is because Universal can still kind of have like a say in like what goes on. So like, it's kind of like mostly out of spite that like they can't like be like, here's your Hulk movie, Mark Ruffalo.
That is mad that they like the Hulk movie was like the second or third film in the MCU, and then they've never been able to give him another solo film since then. Ant-Man gets like three, but like Hulk, nah.
Mm. Everyone's favorite guy. Ant-Man.
There he is.
We had so much Ant-Man merch prior to the film. So much of it.
Yeah, I remember when I was working at Five Guys, for some reason one of the Ogin people just came in with a big stack of Ant-Man and the Wasp posters and just like left them on our table and was like, have these out. I was like, what? No, we're not promoting a film for you. Like, get out of here. Yeah, I have so many stories from Ogin of like leftover merch and stuff, especially because I joined during the pandemic. So, like, there was a point where we got sent a bunch. Again, this is a hell of a tangent, but when the hell else am I going to get to bring it up? We got sent a big pallet of, like, Mulan-branded popcorn boxes. And I think specially flavored popcorn. I don't want to say it was Szechuan-flavored, but it may have been along those lines. And obviously, Disney did pull Mulan and put it on Disney Plus under their weird pay us £20 and you get
it's
to,
gone
it, you get to rent
you know,
the movie.
It's gone now as well. It's gone from Disney Plus, I'm pretty sure now as well.
Mulan.
I'm pretty sure that's one of the ones they pulled.
Good.
Like,
for being evil.
Like that and Artemis Fowl got pulled for just being like movies no one even thought about like after they came out. So
yeah,
I mean, I heard nothing about that film.
People were very scared in the lead up to it coming out, and then yeah, it dropped absolutely silently.
It just truly made no cultural impact.
I love saying that about shit. We brought that exact phrase up a few episodes back. It's a great one to go to. But yeah, That just got me thinking. Spider-Man just gets me thinking about the movies, man. So,
Well, I mean, they are bringing back the Raimis to the cinemas like pretty soon.
Good. So. Honestly, whenever I see any films like coming back, I do just remember the doldrums of like the end of 2020 when they were like, we're gonna put all the Home Alones in and like Nightmare Before Christmas and like every Nolan Batman film. Like half of the Harry Potter films. It was like WB in particular, to their credit, and you can't give Warner Brothers much credit for anything nowadays, but they were like the biggest supporter of like cinemas during the Mick, which questionable ethically. But I mean, you know, Nolan obviously twisted their arm in getting them to put Tenet out to results. And
it was a film and it came out.
Yeah, and they were doing like by far the most like re-releases and stuff. I guess it's because HBO Max wasn't really a thing and still isn't really a thing over here. So
I was gonna say, where did it become a thing?
Yeah, I think there's some tier of like Sky or something where you can get like Paramount and like half of the stuff that's on. As it's called now, by the way, they dropped the HBO bit because they felt it was limiting, baffling. Anyway, to tail back in, my Spider-Man experiences is the movie game on GameCube, where you have what's the guy from Evil Dead?
Bruce Campbell,
yeah. He gives you the tutorial, and at one point he goes off and he gets a sandwich, and he's like, I'm eating a sandwich, a pastrami on rye. Oh, wow. It's like, wow, what a bit. And the only other Spider-Man game I remember is the one on GBA as well, where it starts out with you doing pizza deliveries. But it's all 2D, so you just smash through windows on the side of people's like giant like floor-to-ceiling window build penthouses and then just like throw the pizzas at them. And it also had like 3D special stages where you're just like running around super scalar mode 7 skyscrapers, but you're just like running around on the floor collecting blobs on the floor or whatever. It's
you know, it's spider energy.
Big spider energy, yeah, crawling around and collecting blobs in a non-distinct cityscape.
Yeah, for me though. For me, growing up, at least, Spider-Man was an animated TV show with a theme by one of the people from, I think it was Aerosmith, one of the people that you know everything's about from Aerosmith. A Spider-Man who like yells a lot. If you look up clips from the animated TV show in the 90s, half of them is like Spider-Man like, I will kill you! Get back here!
Is this the radioactive spider blood one?
Yeah.
Spider-blood. the one... That video everyone likes to post where he's like,
no!
And he's like reaching through the smoke.
This one has like a wild recurring cast of friends and foes alike. Did you know, for example, that Hank Azaria plays Venom in the Spider-Man cartoon?
That's excellent.
For Eddie, he does like, you know, like sometimes we do like kind of like New York kind of like Simpsons like minor character voice where he's like, you know, you sick of me, lady. It's like that kind of voice.
I'm Brock in here.
But Venom, it's kind of like, you know, it's he's doing a voice. You know, it was my gateway into like superheroes as a whole, because I remember being terrified by the arc where Spider-Man turns into Man Spider, which is just him as a big spider. It was horrible. I'm being really bummed up with this. There's like this season arc like Six Forgotten Warriors. Which sounds like really exciting because it's like, you know, all these heroes that were around when Captain America was around, they're coming back. But it's just like a little, like I was like 9 when it happened, and it's just like a lot of old people being superheroes. I was like, I don't care about this. I don't want to see like an old man run around really quickly.
Brilliant.
And I remember being really freaked out as well by this, because they did like a Secret Wars arc as well, like where they cross over like their X-Men cartoon and Fantastic Four cartoon and stuff. I got really scared because I put on a cassette tape to listen to, like an audio drama for some reason, And like at one point, like there's like a big conversation scene, and someone like says like something like "I agree" or something, but like it was said at like such a volume in the sound mix that it sounded like it was someone in my room saying like "I agree."
Oh, and no.
I got so scared I could never listen to it again because I was like, "There's someone in the room. There's someone in the room."
The most terrifying thing a person can do.
Agree. But when I got a PS1, I think it was like in. Because we spoke as far, I think I got in like 2001, 2002. It was when the PS2 came out. Because I didn't immediately get this game. I got, which is Spider-Man, which came out in like 2000.
Yeah.
I said before the first games I got were like Shrek Treasure Hunt. And
the classic.
Which, you know. And Scooby-Doo and the Cyber Chase, which is another one.
I do have to ask, is it a PlayStation or is it a PS1, a Sony?
It's a Sony.
A PS1 spelled out phonetically.
Mummy, I want to get a Sony for
Mother,
Christmas.
I want the Sony.
I need the Crash Bandicoot, Mama. Nothing will suffice. I reckon I probably got the like after I got into the animated series because the timelines kind of make sense, but it's fairly vague because like I was like 5 years old when that happened.
Yeah.
Because I know I got like Finding Nemo for PS2, like. In the summer before I got a PS2 on Christmas. So it was probably like around that zone.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter anyway. But I didn't care because like, you know, I was getting Spider-Man. I was like, wow, Spider-Man's here, you know, he's on my PlayStation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think I either played at my friend's house or my friends got it because it was some weird thing that like, I remember being at my friend's house and like running up to him and like, it's Spider time. And we started playing Spider-Man.
That is what he says. Matter,
though, his famous line, it's spider time. That's what's really weird with Madam Web when she says it's Madam Web time. And everyone's like, okay.
It doesn't roll off the tongue quite as well, does it? It doesn't really, no. It doesn't morb out of the mouth and into your heart.
I actually saw a piece about Morbius right around where Michael Keaton, because Michael Keaton's in Morbius for like 2 minutes. And he was like, there I have is. No idea what the fuck I was doing in that movie. Like they didn't even tell me what I was in the movie for. I was in the movie because I don't know how like the whole scene he has in Morbius makes no sense. But anyway, what does make sense? What does matter is the game itself, because it came out in the year 2000, like kind of 1,000 years off of Busted Seven, like you know nothing changed but live in the war. It was the first 3D Spider-Man game.
Wow, I didn't know that. But that doesn't make sense.
Yes, yeah, because everything else is like a side-scrolling, like you know,
yeah,
being a platform or whatever. So this is the first like. Proper like 3D world Spider-Man game developed by Neversoft, who had just come off a couple of games. And you know we were talking about like what who was doing what. One of them was their big celebrity vehicle. That's right, Bruce Willis vehicle Apocalypse, which I really want to get to at some point because it's not like you know What's Cooking with Jamie Oliver or like Russell Grant Astrology where like. It's like someone like just making the game with someone's name on it. Like he's like the main character in this game.
Uh-huh.
I think it's like the Arnold Schwarzenegger movie End of Days, which is a really weird movie. But it's important because that engine that they use gets retrofitted for both Tony Hawk Pro Skater, which comes out like after it, and for this game as well.
That is the thing that's so fascinating to me that they did both Tony Hawk and Spider-Man.
It's a niche, and there's a glow of ads in the game for Tony Hawk Pro Skater 2. there's a level where it's getting ahead of myself now. But there's a level where you have to like fight like lizard men on a train, and you're like it's like a subway train, so you're going past like subway stations, and there's a lot of posters for Tony Hawk Pro Skater 2 on the wall, and it's like great job, guys.
Yep.
Activision published this, of course, because they had like all their games are being published by Activision. Also, Activision were like, we'll give you the license. Because there's a Retro Gamer piece on this from like a couple months ago.
Ooh.
They were like developing a, just for like fun, they were developing a prototype based on Star Trek Voyager, Neversoft software. And then someone there was like, we should go for the Spider-Man license. And then Activision were like, we'll give it to you if it's a 3D game because we're not interested in like any more like, you know, 2D skyscrapers where you're doing stuff. So they're like, yeah, it's good. So the game itself takes place in the Big Apple, the Big Smoke, New York City.
Mm-hmm.
You know, start spreading the news. We're leaving today for New York City because it's been flooded, not by water, by toxic fog.
Uh-huh.
which is both a very flimsy plot element and also a means for them not to have to add in, like, you know, traffic and pedestrians.
Or to show, to show anything below the buildings. I know Superman 64 has a similar framing device where they're like, it's kryptonite smog. Superman, don't fly away from the rings. You're going to go into the kryptonite smog. Although I think that the draw distance in that game is much more egregious. That's mad that Superman got to 3D before, like, Spider-Man, though. Because, like, again, small sidebar, like, think about, like, the Superman games that they've been, and think about how universally bad they've been. I was just not a fun character to make into something you play as.
Well, you know, Superman falls so that Spider-Man can fly, I guess.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This game, it'd be remiss me not to, like, go into the plot of this game, even though I hate just going to plot games, but, like, the plot of this one opens with there's, like, a symposium going on, and Doc Ock is there, and now we all know Doc Ock is, you know, he's not the straightest of arrows. He's a bit, you know, he's a criminal, put it that way. But he's given a symposium because apparently he's reformed and he's, you know, ready for like any kind of thing to come to him. He's apologized for all his crimes, which, you know, includes, like, you know, there's that one comic where he tries to marry Aunt May, even though they're in love, but he still tries to marry Aunt May, and that's a big crime because Spider-Man can't have a stepdad who's a villain, you know. Just think of the awkward family reunions if you know Spider-Man has to say, like, "Hey, Dad," and Doc Ock's like, "I'm gonna kill you." But he's reformed. But what happens is he's given this big speech, and he's voiced by the same voice actor as the animated series.
Okay.
And Spider-Man walks out, and he steals a machine. And the thing is, Spider-Man, well, Peter Parker, I don't even know if it's Peter Parker or Spider-Man, is there covering for the Daily Bugle, and so is Eddie Brock. Now, Eddie Brock and Venom in this game are voiced by, if you thought Hank Azaria was good, Venom and Eddie Brock are voiced by Cosmo from Fairly Odd Parents.
Oh, wow. I thought you were going to say, like, Frank Welker or someone, because I know he can do, like, crazy beast voices.
what energy did he bring? I need to know.
his let's just say his Venom voice, he's going like 110%. He's really committed to, like, giving, like, a really, really fun character. He also voices, to be fair, half the game's characters. It's
I love they that.
Have like they have like Jennifer, I think it's Jennifer Hill plays Black Cat and Mary Jane. Reno Romano plays Spider-Man.
Who? Ray Romano?
If Ray Romano plays Spider-Man, I wouldn't be here. I'd be making money off sharing clips on TikTok.
That's a real, Michelle Ansel, Michael Lonsdale moment.
Yeah. Hey, Deborah, I'm Spider-Man. making millions. It's Reno Romano who played him. He plays him in Spider-Man Unlimited. I'm pretty sure he's in... Now, I'm going to check my notes because I wrote down... I haven't I threw out a sidebar on Venom voice actors because it was just very, like, very long.
Yeah.
There were some crazy voice actors in there. Reno Romano, played him in thing. Cosmo Darren Norris plays the following characters in this game. He plays Venom and Eddie Brock. He plays Mysterio. Mysterio in this, for some reason, his fishbowl has like a neutron in it. I don't know. It's really, really awkward.
I love Mysterio so much. Especially the canon. The canon where he's like, I don't know which, if this is maybe from one of the games or something, but where he's like a burned, like, VFX or, like, special effects artist, and he's like, he's taking that out into the world. He's like, people didn't like my magic in the movies, so I'm gonna make the world magic. I would really love to see a really good... Was Mysterio in, like, one of the amazing Spider-Man films?
Mysterio is a villain of Spider-Man, it's Far From Home, I think, or is it...
Right.
He's in the second one. It's Jake Gyllenhaal, and it's Jake Gyllenhaal is like a spurned Stark guy. Those movies I don't particularly care for, but that's...
That's a lie. I got 20 minutes into Homecoming and I was like falling asleep. Not for me. Yeah.
Darren Norris also plays Scorpion in this game. The Scorpion in the movies is the ultimate version, which is like a mob guy who's like a big hook rather than like the guy in the Scorpion suit, which is much more interesting, I think. He also plays Punisher in this game. He's also the Human Torch, and Cosmo from Fair Parents has played Captain America. if you want to have a good thing there. And then it's like Dee Bradley Baker's like Carnage and J. Jonah Jameson, The Lizard and Daredevil and whatever.
Wow.
That's a lot of stuff. There's a lot of stuff in this game, but what happens basically is that basically Spider-Man's framed for this crime. He has to clear his name with the help of Black Cat. The opening level is like a big bank heist going on, and you have to like throw a bomb into the bank vault to stop it from exploding.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to chase Scorpion to the Daily Bugle because Scorpion wants to kill J. Jonah Jameson. You fight Scorpion, and then Venom is like, "I've kidnapped Mary Jane, Spider-Man."
I'm loving all the name drops. I was like, as you were listing all the like the characters that are being voiced, I was like, this is so many characters for a PS1 game.
It is like, I'll get to it later on, but it is genuinely like a big, like, kind of, I guess,
the most ambitious crossover event of all time, whatever it was they said for Avengers Endgame.
But this one, basically, you have like a lot of boss fights. There's a really, really kind of boring boss fight with Rhino, where like you have to like, get right. There's like, if for some reason, there's like an electrical like wrestling ring that gets put up. That's the only way we can describe it. It's like four pylons in like a square formation that make it like an electrical field.
Yeah.
And you have to like trick Rhino into like running into them, and he shocks himself and you just punch him and he just dies. Uh-huh. It's really boring. It's like really like it's floppier. You have to fight Mysterio then. Basically you go to like a warehouse, and turns out Mysterio is like the guy who was actually posing as Spider-Man that one time.
Yeah. Does Mysterio shoot evil fog at you by any chance?
He does. What Mysterio does is he grows to a giant size, and you just shoot like things on the front. He has like two buttons where his like eye things are, and you just shoot them, and then he shrinks down a bit and you shoot him again.
Oh.
It turns out that Doc Ock is still evil.
And
he's partnered with Carnage, Carnage is one of those boring nice characters. It's just like, I'm so edgy, I kill people. But he partners with Carnage, and basically the plan is he's going to use the toxic fog to turn everyone to symbiotes and then rule as the leader of the symbiotes. And what happens is you beat up Carnage, and then Carnage leaves his host. And this is like the biggest like impact this game has had is its original character, Monster Ock, is basically Doc Ock fused with Carnage. And I haven't felt a level of like actual anxiety playing the game as I have playing the final level of this game, because Monster Ock chases you through all seven levels of, because Doc Ock's base is underwater, so you go underwater to go to his base. He chases you up all seven levels, and if he catches you, which he did once when I was playing, he will literally, it films up from like behind him, but he literally rips you to shreds with his bare hands.
Oh man.
And it's such a visceral like animation, and like the vocal effects, he's like, he's like screaming and he's like ripping you apart. It's so horrifying.
It's making me think of the giant baby from Resident Evil Village. You remember that shit coming out of nowhere?
Yeah. That's just making me think of like fucking Mortal Kombat or like something where they just, this sounds more horrifying than the shit that like parents were going, this will traumatize your children and turn them into killers. Meanwhile, you got Spider-Man.
And that was the decoy. It was in the 70s or whatever, like comic books were the boogeyman. And then they moved on to, I don't know, heavy metal and then rap music and then video games. So then they were like, quick, we can get in on the video games, because they're just expecting all video games to be like evil anyway. This is where we put the really fucked up shit.
It's so crazy that this is in the game, because it is honestly like terrifying. But once you escape him, like an explosion or something, this knocks Carnage off Doc Ock, and there's a really, really weird cutscene where like you basically, Captain America shows up, like, I've come to save you, and like, thank Captain America. You go back to like someone's apartment and you play poker with Captain America, which like, I guess you play poker with Spider-Man, Daredevil, which, you know, and the Punisher. Now the Punisher wouldn't really play poker with superheroes. He probably wants to kill them. So it's a bit strange.
Wait, isn't Daredevil blind?
He is. For some reason, he talks about reading Punisher's cards at one point, and there's no mention of the fact that that's happening.
Like,
it's really
echolocation.
Weird.
Echolocation. Mm-hmm.
Do the cards feel different? Like, I don't understand how it works.
And then it cuts to Human Torch dancing with like I think it's Black Cat. It's really weird. And then it cuts to prison, and all the villains are playing Go Fish together. And like the game itself is fine. It's just in that like weird era of PS1 game where like the combat's like pretty basic. The web slinging stuff is like, you know, you can go one direction.
There's very few like PS1 like action or adventure games. I'm like, oh boy, I can't wait for the combat. This is gonna be great.
The thing is though, like this is obviously the first time they've had to do like web slinging and web crawling in the game. So like it's gonna be pretty kind of, you know, they're figuring out some, like what they're doing. So it takes a while to get on its wavelength, but once you do, it's kind of okay. And I mean, it can be clunky and cumbersome at times, but like this is a franchise that is so clunky and so cumbersome and so silly and convoluted and bizarre. Like this is a franchise where, and this is kind of comics now, but like this is a franchise where the literal devil eats Spider-Man's marriage to save Aunt May from dying. This is a franchise where Spider-Man is actually part of an ancient spider totem, and as a result has like spider destiny powers or whatever the fuck. I mean, if you look at this game, and you touched on this, Sam, earlier on, this came off the back of like one of the most controversial and convoluted storylines comics have ever seen, which is the Clone Saga. I don't know how familiar either you are with the Clone Saga of Spider-Man.
Is this some like bigger Luke fairy stuff? Is this some like Luke?
I'm going to explain it to you in the most quick and basic way possible.
Okay.
In the 70s, there's like a mini storyline where, because you know, Gwen Stacy dies.
Uh-huh.
And at some point, Gwen Stacy turns up again. And they're like, oh my god, it's Gwen. Turns out it's a clone, maybe this guy called the Jackal, who was Glennon Peter's college professor, who was in love with Gwen, which is also already, you know, he's already a bad guy, because that's fairly icky stuff going on there. He makes a clone of Spider-Man who seemingly dies in the same issue. What happens is, in the 90s, death of Superman happens, you know, Superman dies, Nightfall, Bane breaks Batman's back, DC are thriving, Marvel's like, we want that. So Spider-Man introduces a clone that seemingly died in 20 years in the past. He comes back. His name is Ben Reilly. He's the Scarlet Spider. Turns out he survived. There's this whole thing where they test out each other. Like Ben Reilly and Peter test each other out. Peter Parker is a clone. He's not the real Peter Parker. He's never been the real Peter Parker. He's always been a clone. So basically, Peter retires to Portland with Mary Jane. Ben Reilly becomes Spider-Man. What happens then is there's another clone called Kane. Kane shows up. He's like the first Spider-Man clone. He kills people. Amazing Spider-Man 400. Aunt May gets killed. She dies. Aunt May is dead. Peter Parker comes back. Turns out Peter's not a clone. He's actually the real guy. He finds that out because Ben Reilly dies and he turns to dust, which happens when clones dies. So he's like, oh my god. Turns out behind this whole thing the entire time, it's Norman Osborn. What's Norman Osborn doing? He wants to do a magic ceremony called the Gathering of Five, which will give him immortal powers. Powers of power. It turns out Aunt May isn't dead. Now you may be saying, well, we saw Aunt May die. What happened there? Let me read to you what Wikipedia says. This is the exact quote from Wikipedia.
Okay.
The person we saw die was, and I quote, a paid actress infused with Aunt May's DNA, who Spider-Man had believed to die before. This all happens. This is meant to happen. What happened is this is meant to be like a 6-month process.
Yeah.
Where 94 to 94, it's done, sorted. What happens is it starts selling like fucking hot shit. Marvel, like, bleed this dry. It ends in 1996. It lasts for 2 years. At the end of it, no one knows what the fuck is going on. No one has any idea what the hell is going on. 1998 comes around. Norman Osborn goes crazy from the Gathering of Five. Someone gets his powers that he wanted, and that's how one of the Spider-Woman is created, and that Spider-Woman turns up in Madame Web. So it's all full circle now.
Her web connects us all.
Her web connects us all. But like, what that happens, the animated series does like Spider-Verse before Spider-Verse is a thing. The Marvel Universe has this whole thing called like Heroes Reborn, which I cannot explain because it's so convoluted and so stupid. But like, it's no wonder, like, the same year this game comes out, the Ultimate Spider-Man line of comics, or the Ultimate Universe in general, happens as well, which is like a complete, you know, we're updating everything, we're back to basics. This is a whole new line. We're going to do everything so simple, so clear, so you know, understated, and you know, we'll update everything. It'll be fine. It'll be good. There's nothing to worry about. In 6 years, it becomes another mess of its own making because Magneto kills everyone, and this is a whole like reset. Reed Richards becomes evil. It's this whole thing.
I love the absolutes that comics like deal in. Sorry, do go on.
No, it is this whole thing, like comic books. They're silly. that way. And Ultimate Spider-Man obviously gets his own game, which I have played, which also has Venom. I didn't get enough time to play it this time. It's a solid game. You play as Venom after you beat the game. I remember playing that with my cousin Desmond, like, this is fun. I'm jumping off buildings, I'm absorbing people, you know. It's whatever. And then obviously the movies happen, that becomes like the touchstone, I think, for our generation of like, this is what Spider-Man is.
Yeah.
But see, the game is like an open heart, like celebration of all that mess, you know?
Right. That it does explain the sort of ensemble cast.
The ensemble cast, you can find a lot of classic comic book covers throughout the game, which is the same thing as like X-Men Legends, where you can find all these like comic book covers everywhere. It's full of these fan favorite characters, obviously, like, you know, there's a bit where you find the Baxter Building and you like some stuff with the Fantastic Four. It is like the biggest thing of all, though, is the cheat system, which, you know, we talk about someday, like in general, the kind of golden age of like cheats, because there's so many PS1 and PS2 games. I'm playing the X-Files games at the moment for a future thing. Mm-hmm. And that has cheats. That has an invincibility cheat for some reason. I don't know why. Because not a lot of combat in that game, let me tell you. But I don't know how I found out about the big cheat in this game, which is Eel Gnats. Type in Stanley's name backwards and you unlock everything, including invulnerability, including all like the because it includes, you know, storyboards and animatics. You get all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It unlocks a what if mode, which is named after the comic book line What If, which is usually like, you know, what if Spider-Man had like five legs, or what if the thing was your mom, whatever, you know. It's like this whole thing, but in this it's basically like the golden eye big head mode. It doesn't really do much. It's a funny silly little thing.
Wait, so they call it the what if mode, but they just have big heads.
Yeah, it's just big
just
heads.
Big brains.
There's a thing as well, because like at like the final level you need to turn off the kind of things that are making the toxic fog. But in the what if mode, you just it puts like giant bananas in there to like clog up the pipes.
Yeah, I kinda love that.
That is a fun addition. that kind of stuff is what makes like Spider-Man one of my favorite guys, because, you know, it's partly like a childhood nostalgia thing of like, you know, this was like a huge part of my childhood. But also like it always felt like so, and it still feels so fresh and so like exciting to see a superhero like who always just kind of fucks up.
You know,
he's always stressed out. He's always stressed out. He's always anxious, but he never like gives up. He always like, you know, tries to do the right thing. He always fights, and like, I can relate to like a quarter of those things. You know, mostly the fucking up a lot kind of thing. I can relate to that. I don't know. Like growing up, this was my gateway into like, you know, all this kind of stuff and superhero stuff and comic stuff. And like I kind of fell out of that a little bit as a teenager because I was like, you know, this stuff's stupid. You know, I got to focus on, you know, on chicks. I can't focus on, you know, Captain America or Children of the Atom, whatever it was called. But like
Days of Future Past.
Days of Future Past, more like Days of Future David Dune stuff. 10 years ago, as a big last hurrah, I read through all of Amazing Spider-Man from like 63 up to 2013.
That's crazy.
But the problem was like halfway through they introduced like three or four different Spider-Man books that they were like tying everything into, so I lost track of like what was going on, because like it'd be like catch this next thing and like Web of Spider-Man number 15. I was like, I don't have that one, so I won't read that. I will say though, just to close out, there's a recent Spider-Man comic by my favorite guy in comics, Jonathan Hickman. He's a great writer. They've relaunched the Ultimate Universe line of comics, because they keep doing that for like 10 years. But this one is really interesting because I won't say how it happens, but basically what happens is this world basically that had superheroes, someone changes something so that the superheroes never existed. But they start to like come out of their shell now. So the Spider-Man in this universe is 40 years old. He has two kids, and he gets his powers then. So it's like, you know, a middle-aged Spider-Man. I won't say there's some elements that like have been changed as a result. There's maybe certain people who were alive who weren't alive before.
Okay.
Maybe certain brothers of parents are still alive. And there's like, it's just, it's a really interesting comic because it's only two issues in. So like, if you want to catch up, they can catch up immediately because it's, you know, it's still fresh. Mm. But it's really fun to see like this middle-aged guy, you know, and it's a whole book about like, you know, if you had like a life before and it got taken from you and then you suddenly got it, like, are you obliged to live the years that you would have lived if you had this gift already? Or are you allowed to, like, you know, it's kind of like, you know, with great power comes great responsibility.
Mm.
But later,
crossed with a great game is delayed forever, or whatever the thing Miyamoto said was.
Miyamoto are Spider-Man in a way, because, you know, he shoots webs and he
doesn't afraid of anything.
Mm-hmm. 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 Yeah. So if you're looking, I mean, if you're looking to play the game that's actually like an hour and a half, maybe just like an hour and a half, and it's kind of clunky, then there you go. There's a sequel with Electro, which I'll never play because. My friend was like, my friend at the time was like, you can borrow my copy if you want. And I was like, yeah, I'll do that. That'd be great. And then he never gave me his copy of this game.
Oh.
Yeah.
So on principle, I'll never play Enter Electro.
The only thing I know about Enter Electro is it came out like a month after 9/11. Oh. And the final set piece was supposed to be on top of the Twin Towers. And then they were like, uh-oh, got to change this. So they put like a big plank of wood between the two of them so that they can say it's not the Twin Towers anymore. Very strange. Mm-hmm. That was obviously a big thing in like Raimi's Spider-Man as well, like the original trailers.
Mm-hmm. That's also the original trailer where he's like, yeah, where he catches the helicopter between the Twin Towers and it's like, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I won't do my Stanley impression, but I will say, enough said. Yeah, I'm done.
So your talk of eight-legged creatures got us thinking about some six-legged friends and also some eight-legged creatures, but they came along later. They're different.
legally distinct.
They're cooler. So the main reason I actually got it on was I wanted to host a little bit of a Splatoon segment, and Kit has a lot more hands-on experience with the Wii U game than I do, and I find that like early, you know, that year that the Wii U game was about for is like super interesting, because I mean whenever I see old footage of that first game, it looks so different. Like the UI is completely different, the graphical style is so different, the inklings are like way shorter as well.
Yeah, way stouter.
Yeah, they have really wide heads.
Yes, that's
it's very strange.
It's like they've been squished.
It's very much like they've been squished. So I wanted to make a little bit of a like whistle stop tour of the history, because they're actually coming up on the 10-year anniversary of its grand unveiling.
Oh my God.
But I also just wanted to, I know, I also wanted to just spend some time talking about like specifically the campaigns. Because I think there's some really interesting stuff going on in those.
Funny thing is I think most of my memories of Splatoon 1, I've been really raking my brain.
Mm.
They really are of the single player experiences more than the multiplayer experiences from the multiplayer game.
Yeah, I mean, you're not going to be like, oh man, I remember that one match I had on like the 4th of March at 7:56 p.m. Wow, what a classic that was. I mean, maybe you'll remember something vaguely clutch, but like, I mean, you know, you're never going to remember individual matches of Splatoon in the same way you'll remember a campaign. But yeah, I suppose we should start at the beginning and start at that reveal at E3 2014, which was probably one of the best E3s Nintendo had had, at least in a good while, definitely since the Wii U had been unveiled.
Yeah,
because that was you know, they unveil that, people are generally confused, then the next year they close with the Nintendo Land fireworks. And then the year after that, they're like, well, we're only doing directs now. We're not going on stage. You bullied us too much about the fireworks.
We're taking our epic fireworks and we're staying online.
It's staying on the gamepad.
People are famously kind.
We can retreat back into Miiverse and it's fine.
That's true.
Octo-G123 and non-specific action figure can save us. You remember that shit when they unveil Miiverse? And they have this whole bit where there's a guy playing Zombie U, but they haven't announced Zombie U yet, so it's just like the icon's just a pistol. And he's like, oh, I keep getting munched, what the hell? And then he goes on Miiverse and posts about it, and then someone called Octo-G123 replies and is like, oh, hop on Wii U chat, I'll tell you how to beat the baddies. And then he hops on, it's this guy in a mobility scooter, like sitting on the other end of the room in this perfect webcam feed. And he's like, oh, hey, Sonny Jim, I'm calling you on the Wii U gamepad. Here's what you do, you hit him in the head. And then he's like, oh, wow, thanks. And it's a very strange way for them to announce a social network.
And as everyone knows, historically, it went very well.
It went very, very well. There's a game coming out, either soon or it came out recently, and I forget the name, but it's sort of a combination of like Hypnospace Outlaw, which is like a small simulation of like, it's sort of parody of the internet and like the early days and like the mid to late 90s.
Yeah, that's on my slate to play at some point.
You absolutely, Hypnospace Outlaw is very much for you, Kit. I think you'd really enjoy
it. I think it's already downloaded on a console. I can't remember which one, but
it's on Game Pass at the moment, I'm pretty sure.
Maybe that's the one then.
Yeah. You can also plug in a mouse and keyboard if you want to go full simulation experience. Yeah, it's very good though. But that game's all about like following rabbit holes and stuff, so big recommend from me. But yeah, there is a game, and I forget the name of it, so I'll surreptitiously dub myself in saying it.
Videoverse.
It's like Hypnospace Outlaw, but they say it's about gaming social networks, but it's like, well, Miiverse then. Like, that's the only one there was. I don't know what else, like PlayStation Home? how are you gonna turn that into a game? But we're not talking about Miiverse, we're talking about E3 2014 and that kind of bonkers press conference / Nintendo Direct where it opens with Reggie Iwata fighting. And it has like this insane production value. People are spinning around everywhere, and then it's the big unveil of Amiibo. Iwata reaches into his jacket pocket and pulls out a very dodgy looking Mario prototype and puts it on the gamepad, and Reggie sits back in awe and goes, oh, Mario, and gets his ass handed to him by an Amiibo, which is a thing that's never happened at all in the history of Amiibo. But you know, that conference goes on and they have some interesting announcements. They have the Captain Toad treasure tracker being turned into a full game. There's Mario versus Donkey Kong getting turned from like a weird web app thing into a full game. They're scraping everything together. Super Mario Maker gets its first unveil, but it looks very odd.
Yeah.
and the like new Super Mario Brothers U style is like very clearly like just like sprites pasted on top. It looks rough. And when they say it's coming out in 2015, I'm like, okay, good. Let that go, please. We get our first look at Breath of the Wild, of course, and then we go on calling it Zelda Wii U for about 3 years, which would never happen again.
No.
Never again. Not with like the sequel to The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild, which I think we were calling that for about as long, if not longer. And it goes on, and then eventually we get, you know, the heads up that there's going to be something new, and we get this big, the Wii U logo is orange and it's made out of ink and it's looking very Nickelodeon. Yes. And then a very strange CG animation of this like squid like sliding around happens, and then it jumps out and ink goes all over the screen. And then there's a bunch of very young excitable developers sitting in an aquarium pointing at sharks and stuff. And they're like, when we wanted to make a game about squids, we wanted to make it. It's like that like amazing guy. They get to like dub the voices sometimes. That makes like the guy they get for Sakurai every time always makes me laugh because he's just like so blunt. He's just so great.
He's perfect.
Like one of the best to ever do it. He's perfect. He's perfect for Sakurai. But yeah, Splatoon gets announced, which is You know, people have been really clamoring for Nintendo to do a new IP. Like people,
and also to do something with the Wii U.
Also to do something on Wii U, yeah, to do something new, because it's like the most recent games up to this point have been like Mario 3D World, which was good, but not really what people wanted from a 3D Mario. Wind Waker HD, which again is good, but it's a remake of a GameCube game, and people get kind of mixed about the visual style. Mario Kart 8 has just come out, and people are quite happy about that. You know, this is slightly, I guess, jumping ahead from E3, but when Smash Brothers came out and that wasn't saving Wii U, I was like, it's over. Like, there's, because we were all holding out, we were like, you know, Mario is going to save it like it did for the 3DS, and it didn't. And then Mario Kart's going to save it, and it boosted things a bit. I think, I remember as well when the Xbox One got announced, there was some crazy statistic where it was like, Wii U sales have gone up 8,000%. 8,000% of zero was still zero, though, I'm afraid. But we're going into 2014. Smash doesn't really take off. It's like, yeah, it's not bouncing back. But Splatoon is getting sort of a bit of hype, and it kind of confounds me when the game first gets revealed, because I am not entirely sure what Nintendo were doing making a shooter. I'm sort of like, I do get that they're making it like ink and colorful and like more friendly, I guess, but I am also like, it feels like you're courting like kind of a hardcore audience but with a sort of kiddie aesthetic, and I don't think it, to me, it felt like it wasn't going to appeal. I mean, you know, I was very clearly wrong, but when I was seeing it at the time, I was like, this feels like a strange...
I think, I wanted to quickly say, I think it did come out at a time when there were a lot of shooters, did it not?
True. I think Counter-Strike GO was still pretty big. Halo 4 had come out a couple years before.
Like, I distinctly remember having the thought, like, oh, it's a shooter and it's colorful. Like, there's color.
Yeah.
Like, I very much remember having that thought.
Yeah, that was definitely a big thing about it. I do want to say as well that at the same E3, you know, people were continuing to clamor for original IP. Nintendo did also announce in sort of a weird backdoor press conference that codename Steam would be coming out the next year for the 3DS. Which would be their other new big original IP from Intelligent Systems, the Fire Emblem guys, and it's about a bunch of public domain book authors and characters. You've got like Abraham Lincoln and maybe Little Red Riding Hood or something. And then like some kind of Herlock Sholmes type character. I do just remember they put Abe Lincoln all over the marketing for that, and it was like, well, that's... why are you doing that in Europe? Like, who's and yeah, that game famously flopped. I think you can still get copies of it for like £1 on Amazon. So good for them. I mean, they tried. But yeah, I remember being quite confounded by sort of the hype around it. I was wondering if you had any thoughts when this was being announced, David, if you felt like this might be the savior of Wii U or...
I'll be honest with you. When I saw this come up, and I saw like the E3 thing, I was like, I'm not gonna delve into that. And yeah, I was like, this is fundamentally not a serious prospect for me.
Yeah.
So I made it my life's mission. No, I didn't make my last mission. I didn't have a Wii U either.
That
so
kind of cinches the deal. That does decide things for you.
And when it came to it started to come to Switch, like, all the sequels, I was like, I could do this, and I have been tempted a moment to finally put my foot into the old Splatoon inkwell. But I've at the same time I was like, I'm 27. Life's still short for me right now.
Is this gonna be your moment though, where you come back to this in a few years, like when you dropped Marvel Comics, and you'll hear the call of the squid?
Will this be my life until I die in a very funny way at the age of 31? You know,
but you're in old man makeup at the time. Yeah. You're in Mark Gatiss old man makeup, sitting in a bed.
Very big earlobes, very big jowls. Going
the life I've lived without Splatoon.
I just wish I had played at least one Splatoon game.
I'd hopped on.
I invested my life in Foam Stars for nothing.
For nothing.
I was wondering when Foam Stars was going to come up. Well, I suppose we'll get onto like the weird sort of clones,
Was Crayola Scoot one as well?
Crayola Scoot was a very interesting game. Crayola Scoot is like... Razor Freestyle Scooter, which is already like kind of riffing on Tony Hawk meets Splatoon meets Jet Set Radio.
Mm-hmm.
I know you're only bringing that up because I bought it for like a fiver on the Xbox store and played it at your place and was like, look, it's surprisingly good. And you remain thoroughly unconvinced.
I mean, I just remember constantly telling you to switch to the interesting choice of red crayon color.
Red ink. And I called my player character Bloodborne. Yes,
you did. And
just drove around splatting red crayon fluid around.
It's not good.
That's the thing, it's Crayola. Like, it's, yeah. Why is it ink?
I mean, Crayola do markers, don't they?
I suppose. They do those, like, weird little stamp markers where you can put tiny smiley faces on everything.
I guess it is ink, technically,
sure.
But I think of crayons.
It meets the standards of the Crayola brand. It is fascinating. There's also Atari are trying to bring back everyone's favorite arcade game, Food Fight. They're doing some sort of Food Fight online. It's not really a shooter. It genuinely looks like a game that's been made in Roblox. I don't remember if it's just called Food Fight, but they put out a trailer for it, and I was like, this is the most, like, craven attempt at a Splatoon knockoff, and this is destined to be cancelled, or, like, release and, like, immediately kill a studio. It's, like, it's kind of sad, but it is also one of those things where it's like, well, it's a hell of a toboggan ride. You're just looking at it like, yeah, well, let's see what happens with this. I was going to say that it's interesting that Splatoon was sort of the first thing we'd heard from the new generation of development talent that we'd heard were getting, like, weaned on New Super Mario Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
Like, every time, when New Super Mario Brothers games were coming out and people were kind of critical about them being a bit basic, I do remember one of the big defenses was like, well, this is the new team and they're sort of, you know, they're giving them these 2D Mario games to, like, train them up.
Mm-hmm.
And it was quite exciting to finally see these guys, like, get to do something new and, like, pretty creative, even for as, like, unconvinced as I was at the start. I was going to say there's also, like, a really interesting development history that Nintendo were quite public with, like, surprisingly frank about, where the Squid iteration was actually quite a while down the pipeline.
Yes.
In the E3 video, they say as much. They say something along the lines of, like, at Nintendo, we designed gameplay first and characters second, so we had the idea of splatting a world in colorful ink, and then eventually we landed on the Squid, which is great. Again, great philosophy to have, but it just leads to stuff like this, where it's like, well, it was ink. Why didn't you think of Squid? They started out with, it was just black and white cubes going around, and they called that the tofu prototype.
Yeah.
They were just splatting black and white ink around. Then they used rabbits for a while, and they got really, really stuck on the idea of rabbits. They really wanted to use the rabbits, and they had this idea where they'd, like, hide under a t-shirt or something so that people couldn't see them on top of the ink. And they were like, but they can't move when they're just under the blanket. It's like, this isn't fun. This is just, like, wait around until someone either goes past you or kills you. And then they came up with the swimming idea. I think at one point they were kind of humanoid. At another point, they were going to make it a Mario spin-off as well. Because that's kind of the go-to if they have a game prototype and they don't know what to do with it. Like, Mr. Miyamoto walks in and goes, wow, it's Mario. He's Mr. Video. He can do anything. You can just put him in this. But so it gets hyped up for a bit. And then it launches in mid-2015. It's about a year after Mario Kart 8. It's been a fairly quiet year for Wii U up to that point as well. It's like, I think Captain Toad dropped at the start of the year. R.I.P. Captain Toad. And I'm trying to think about, again, there was that Mario versus Donkey Kong game that they called Tipping Stars. Because it was linked to Miiverse, and the whole idea was that you'd, like, rate each other's levels with stars, and they'd call it Tipping Stars. Mm-hmm. And then you'd unlock currency that would let you build more things and build better levels. But I don't know why they named the entire game after that. Like, it was like the key mechanic. It was like, yes, we have given the ability to like each other. We have invented Reddit karma.
I feel like that is a very good synopsis of the Wii U but
the Wii U just sort of rush in. This probably appeals. Let's figure out the details later,
yeah.
And then they never figure the details out. But yeah, it drops in May 2015, and I remember it's quite well received, but the big criticism first off is that, like, the content at launch is pretty anemic.
Yep.
People can tell, like, and people have played, like, more stages in the demos and stuff, so people can tell they're sort of holding out. I don't know how soon you bought it, like, after launch kit. Like, were you there day one, or...?
I have memories of playing the test fire because I...
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, I got my Wii U. I think it was, like, one of my first big purchases from, like, working.
Mm.
I was, like, there was, like, a indie game shop in the center of town, and I was, like, I remember seeing the Legend of Zelda Wind Waker Wii U in there, and I was, like, ooh, I think I'll come back for that after payday. And mm-hmm. and I did. And then proceeded to play all three games and then was looking forward to the fourth.
Yeah.
Splatoon. So I was invested in its success in a way that I never had been with a console before. That shook out very well.
It is. There are so many, I mean, there's a very extensive study of what prolonged exposure to the Wii U does to a person's brain, and he's called Scott the Woz.
He is, and I feel there's a
he's
part
all
of him,
of us.
There's a part of him in there, in my brain. He says what we're all thinking.
He really does. Why doesn't this use the gamepad more? And then it uses the gamepad more, and the functionality is awful, mm-hmm. and you remember why the gamepad doesn't get used.
And the fucking resolution is dog shit, and you're like, yep,
yeah,
I have better resolution on my phone, that's why.
Yes, although Splatoon does have a somewhat novel idea of having,
yes.
it's a map screen,
yep.
which is something that a lot of games do with the gamepad, but it's like interactive.
Yes, so... and I remember that about it very much, as being able to, I think more than either of the other Splatoon games I've played, I would actually jump to people on that, because it was always available, it was always there, and it's like, it's a real shame that there isn't an easier way to do that in the newer Splatoons, because I do think that was, like, the one thing that first Splatoon did best was having constant map access.
And the other thing that's interesting is that it kind of codifies, like, gyro aiming, which isn't super popular in games up to that point. It's like, the Zelda remakes have it. Mm-hmm. I remember when it was in Ocarina of Time 3D, people were like, oh, this makes the shooting gallery games, like, actually doable. Because you're not, like, fighting the crusty N64 controller and, like, wrenching it out of the dead zone to move, like, two notches at a time.
Mm-hmm.
But... yeah, it's really interesting how, like, gyro aim in general sort of become accepted.
Yeah, and it really feels like Splatoon kind of did a lot to, I guess, sell that.
Yeah, it did lead the charge. I think what's different about it compared to those 3DS games as well is it's, of course, like, you're moving the controller, but that's not necessarily the screen you're looking at, where on
exactly.
3DS it could be slightly awkward in that way. Even more so if you had the 3D effect on the original model.
Yeah.
I do remember when they said there was going to be a gyroscope and stuff in the 3DS, but then they were also talking about the quote-unquote sweet spot that you have to stay in. I was like, well, those feel counter to each other. Obviously, when they did the new 3DS, that sorted a lot of the stuff out. I'm still, like, I didn't mention it in my Week in Gaming segment, but I am still very much playing through Virtual Boy because the 3D effect on 3DS looks incredible. And I do just every so often, like, shift the 3DS from side to side and watch it, like, slightly warp a bit as it's, like, matching my eyes. Because I'm just spellbound by how well it works. It feels like it works too well for a Nintendo product. It's like,
yeah, for real.
Not that Nintendo make bad products, but it's like they usually go with less technologically advanced solutions.
You can tell the new 3DS came in right at the end of its life, where they'd finally kind of tweaked it. You know, they'd just done it and perfected it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, for sure. That does remind me, there was a sort of Nintendo Life did like a April Fool's in 2016, where they were saying that there was going to be a Splatoon port on 3DS called Splatoon Legends. And they mocked up some screenshots, which is obviously them like riffing on like Hyrule Warriors Legends and stuff. That was one of those articles that like Google just like held onto it in its cache, and I keep getting it as like spam adverts. It would be like, Splatoon Legends is coming to the 3DS in June 2016. And I'm like, it's 2021. What's happening? Why do you think I'm this interested in it?
We need the reminder of history.
I need the reminder of this April Fool that like definitely got people. So yeah, I suppose now that we've talked a bit about like the build up, it's sort of like, yeah, that launch experience where they were rolling things out. I remember they had something in particular where it was like, if everyone in the world gets to a particular level, then we'll unlock this many state, we'll unlock this like ranking mode or something. Like, I think that was how the tower got unlocked. It was like everyone had to get to level 50 or something.
I remember that. I don't think it was as high as 50.
It wasn't as high as 50, no.
I definitely never, I don't even know if 50 existed.
It might not have.
I want to say
that we might not be able to handle it.
I want to say that in the early game, I think levels might have been locked to 30.
You might be right. There might have been a cap.
There's a tickle in my brain, because I think I reached that cap, and then the cap got moved up, and then by the time that happened, I think I'd already fallen off, and and never played the game again.
Well, the problem with when you have a cap like that and then you remove it is it's not like you'll get match made with other level 30s, but like those could have been people that just got to level 30 yesterday, or people that have been like sweating hard and have been at that level for 2 months and play every day and are like you know, theoretically should be like level 70 or whatever. So if that's one of the, you know, when you remove that cap later, like, you've just, the matchmaking's kind of broken.
Yeah, 50, I think 50 was a cap later on. I want to say that it was raised to 50.
I do just remember that graphic of the big tube getting filled up with paint, and they were like, look, this many people got to this level.
Yep.
Oh, and it was like, it was very strange. I guess it was their way of like building the community up, but I remember it was, a lot of people...
and to be fair, I mean, it maybe had some effect. I think people were playing it anyway, but I mean, at least they didn't completely like leave it to flail. Like they made social media campaigns and stuff.
Yeah.
I think one thing I really remember about Splatoon as well, like playing the online, is that in the original sort of build, I'm pretty sure no one knew how to deal with the roller weapon. Or the Kraken. I remember,
yes, everyone was saying that was OP.
Yep,
no one knew OP how, in Splatoon 1.
No one knew how to deal with it, and the Kraken was also designated OP. And I remember having an affinity for the roller and the Kraken, and being like, oops, sorry.
Yeah, I'm kind of the worst at...
I was that guy.
I'm kind of the worst at that kind of thing. I was musing on it earlier when I was doing my notes, and I was thinking about how when Splatoon 1 was winding down was like when I started uni, and like when I met you and like the rest of our friend group, and when we used to play Smash for Wii U. And, you know, everyone would get out their 3DSs to link that up. People would be on 3DSs, people would be on sideways Wii remotes, a couple people would have GameCube control. I don't even know if we had the GameCube controller adapter, actually. Someone might have had a Wii U Pro controller or something. But, yeah, I just remember being the absolute worst, because I'd always pick Wario, and I'd always use the bike to just shove people off the side of the stage. I just always, because it was just funny how he'd just be like, go, and we'd just like, it would be like, yeah, you're not on the stage anymore now, fuck off.
My stage now.
They nerfed him pretty severely in Smash Ultimate, and you know what, fair enough.
Understandable.
Yeah, I also remember from that time at uni that said friend with the Wii U was trying to get me and our mutual friend Vern to play Splatoon, and we were both a bit intimidated by, like, you know, the online nature of it all. So we played a bit of that weird co-op battle mode where you're going around like bursting balloons, and that was a strange experience. I remember there was that graphic that came out where it was like, you can get gyro aim if you take a shoelace and tie a Wii remote to a classic controller or a pro controller, which, yeah, I don't know if you ever heard about that. And there's like a hidden button combination. One of the later Sunken Scrolls and like one of the later campaigns brings it up. It like shows a fossil of a human, and then there's that like weird.
I forgot this.
I remember they posted about it on the, because Splatoon had a Tumblr page for some reason. They posted about it.
Of course
there.
It did. It was 2015. Of course
the
they
Squid
had.
The Squid Research Lab. Yeah, they had to get those teams.
I remember that now.
And I also remember that friend sitting me down with like the final boss and being like, "This is the best final boss ever," because people were really hyping up that story mode, which we will get into. But yeah, it was interesting to watch from the outside. I think it was something where the whole competitive nature of it did seem very sweaty.
I mean, you've seen more recent iterations. It's only built from there.
Yeah, it kind of only got sweatier.
Because people get so into those games that they just don't stop playing, and then they get to the new one and they're already like so good.
Yeah.
Even though things have, like, you know, obviously changed a bit, like, you can't really stop someone who's used to playing something. You can't nerf them, essentially. They're gonna have that ability transfer.
Yeah. Exactly. You always think a new game's going to be a fresh start with the rebalance of the meta and stuff, but there are like fundamentals to those games. But that's why I wanted to sort of talk about the sort of single player and co-op experience, because I think it's sort of worth bringing that sort of thing up. So like Splatoon 1 single player, I remember some people calling it sort of like a mini Mario Galaxy, which I think was over-egging it slightly. I guess, you know, it has that whole thing where you're jumping between different areas and doing like miniature tasks. I don't know if it left much of an impression on you. I know you said you had like some memories, but
I actually remember playing through that whole single player and genuinely going back through it, and you could use, like, I can't remember how many different weapons, but you got a bunch of different ones. You'd like, you know, you got your hero sort of version of, like, the splatter shot and the roller, I believe. I believe it was in that happened in the first one.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure I leveled them all up, like, as much as I could, which I think took a fair amount of commitment.
Yeah. No,
returning to it. Like, I just really vibed with it. And I distinctly remember the tracks as well. The tracks in those single player levels were so strange, and so they had their own like footprint, really, more so than the multiplayer, if you ask me.
I suppose what I was going to say as well was that it was interesting after the response that Splatoon 1 had, seeing it pushed so far up in the Switch reveal. I do remember when that got put out, and it had a lot of very interesting footage in it. It had obviously that version of Mario Kart 8 where it was like King Boo was in it and there was like an extra item slot.
Yes.
And people were like, what is that? Like, is that like a weird prototype or something? And then there was like just straight up Skyrim, and then there was a NBA game, which 2K had to come out and say, no, we're not actually making like an NBA game for it. And then they sort of got their arm twisted just because it had been in the trailer to put NBA 2K18 on Switch, and I don't think it was a good version. I think the performance was quite bad.
Yep.
But yeah, and then one of the big showstoppers is they have this bit where they show these guys getting together in this big esports stadium, and they're playing this new version of Splatoon, which I thought was interesting, Nintendo trying to court the esports scene at the time, because they'd sort of infamously gone out against like Evo back in 2013, and tried to get Smash Melee taken off the roster, and that led to this big backlash, and then eventually Nintendo start organizing their own Smash tournaments and stuff. I think they're taking a bit of a step back from it now because the Smash community had some pretty bad allegations and infighting happen, and they were like, this isn't cute anymore. This isn't
Nintendo branded.
We're
gonna just, this is not safe for our family friendly image. We're just gonna bounce.
Yeah, for real. But yeah, it's interesting that they push it during the Switch reveal, and I remember people especially freaking out because the Inklings had different trousers. People were like, oh, the trousers finally. You can, this is a whole new world, a whole new frontier.
People being like,
yeah.
I think people were already talking about Octolings at that point as well. Like, maybe they'll be Octolings. Maybe they'll be playable.
I do remember one of the earliest mods for Splatoon on Wii U was playable Octolings and playable Squidward. Which both sort of fought in people's minds. Yeah. Are you an Octoling or are you a Squidward? And this is, for full context, the Octolings are sort of like, some of them are sort of the enemies in the single player mode, but they're like entirely NPCs, and they're these sort of, I mean, you know, they're octopuses where you're squids. They're sort of like shadowy looking and quite evil. But they eventually work them into Splatoon 2 in like quite a big way. Through that game's Octo expansion, which I think would be a good thing to talk about. Because Splatoon 2 does have,
probably talk about the Splatoon 2 single player as well, but
sure. It's quite similar to the first from what I've heard.
Definitely.
I don't have that hands-on experience with the first, but it was something where even playing it without having the first one, I did feel like it was like,
You essentially did get to play the first one, I will say. Like, there's not a massive amount of difference. The main difference is that there's glitter in the ink now in the single player.
Right! I remember Digital Foundry bringing that up. They were like really fascinated by that effect.
It was a cool effect. Like, I really enjoyed it. And the in-universe reason for it is pretty good as well.
What was the in-universe reason?
It was because of, I don't want to spoil
away.
It. I was gonna say, because it's Callie, basically.
Yeah.
But she's been taken over. She's got mind control glasses, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Sunglasses.
Yes. Yeah.
She's got mind control sunglasses, and thus she was yassifying the ink, I guess. For lack of a better
term. I didn't realize that was
term.
The lore reason. That's really funny.
That's why there's glitter, I'm pretty sure. That's what I've heard. I can't remember if it was canon or not, but I think it's heavily implied that the ink in the campaign is glittered because of her.
Like, because of Callie's influence.
Yeah, because she's just going, and glitter.
Yeah.
Evil glitter.
There is, like, so much to touch on in Splatoon that I am, like, definitely conscious of time, but, like, the interesting thing is that they weave in how people play in the multiplayer into the single player, because, of course, the plot of that Splatoon 2 single player is the last Splatfest. In Splatoon 1 is like, who's the better of the two idol characters, Callie or Marie? To me, they look like the same thing. But
I know my partner has a similar thought.
Yeah, apparently one of them's the demure, snarky one, and one of them's the upfront, snarky one.
One's sort of quieter, demure, and the other one is more upbeat and sort of upfront, I would say.
Right, is
the better way to put it.
So, like, one of those Tumblr images where it's like, are you an extrovert or an introvert? Here's a bunch of personality traits.
Yeah, or they're, I guess, to sort of go off Japanese stereotypes, I guess maybe it's like a straight man.
Probably.
Yeah, straight man. I forget what the Japanese one is specifically.
I mean, like, the idols themselves are, like, a really interesting part of Splatoon, because they do work them into the single player a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, with Octo Expansion, you have Pearl and Marina getting worked in, and I do find them much more interesting idols than Callie and Marie.
They're far more engaging. I mean, you'd hope so, given that they, Callie and Marie were like the proto idols, you know? It makes sense that they were a bit safe. I'm glad they went far more interesting for the later ones.
Yeah, for sure. And they also have that whole angle where, like, they're all also, like, they have alter egos. It's like,
yes,
Callie and Marie are, like, secret agents. And it's kind of the same with Marina and Pearl. And then obviously in the third game, Off the Hook are like bandits.
Yep.
I was quite surprised to see them outright be villains. It's a very fun turn. I mean, they're not really villains. They're like anti-heroes.
They're Team Rocket, really.
Yeah.
They're Team Rocket. That's who they are, where it's like they're antagonists in a way.
Yeah.
And then they team up with you at the end, you know?
I seem to remember the reason that they team up with you is they're just like, it's too much effort. We just keep getting our asses handed to us, so.
Yeah. Anyway, that's bypassing Octo Expansion entirely. Like, that was a massive change to the formula for the single-player experience.
Yeah, because they take the approach where the previous games felt like these sort of, again, like, mini Mario Galaxy, Mario platformer-style levels, and it turned it into these, like...
But also, like, tutorial.
Yeah, it's essentially a tutorial.
Yeah. Like, a lot of people felt like those original single campaigns were, like, baby's first foray into Splatoon, essentially, where they taught you the basics, you know?
Yeah, they take this approach of, like, these mini-challenges, and it's much more difficult overall as well. And it's, it's really engaging. It's really fun. I was quite happy when they put it on the expansion pass, because, I played that right before... Free came out, and it was slightly traumatizing failing the final boss and like watching Inkopolis Square or whatever just get like obliterated over and over. It's like, well, I guess I really am done with Splatoon 2 now.
I mean, I to speak on like on Octo Expansion being much harder, like genuinely I remember points of Octo Expansion getting like actually genuinely frustrated, like to the point of having to stop playing because I couldn't complete sections, which to be fair, I'm not even critiquing that. It's just it's such a massive change from the original campaign, which is pretty paint by numbers and easy, to be honest.
I mean, it outright has bits where you just like stand on rails and you just move from the next period to the other and nothing's really happening in that original campaign. But yeah, I think it's especially fun that with Octo Expansion they do these mini challenges and they're not afraid to make them more difficult, but they're also crucially a lot shorter, which feels, you know, good to just hop in and out of.
Definitely.
And then they go into Splatoon 3 and like that sort of becomes the de facto story mode. And I do feel like Splatoon 3's might be the strongest out of all of them. I might need to go back to Octo Expansion to sort of know my thoughts for sure.
My memory is that Splatoon 3 just did a real good job of building on what Octo Expansion did. And just making that the new de facto story mode. Which definitely, after, given that it was the third game, I think, well time for the change, honestly.
Yeah, exactly. I think, I mean, I was saying it to David before we did the recording, but like one of the levels that really stuck with people, or the sets of levels, were the one around the new ability where you can sort of sticky yourself around the level.
Yep.
And it's very Spider-Man-esque. It's got the big bombastic superhero theme.
Yes.
You're flying through the sky. It's like, those levels are just like awesome.
They're so good.
And the music goes really crazy as well. It's like, that soundtrack is like superb.
Yep. I mean, much like I said with the first game, like that one had a mad soundtrack. And the third game definitely continues that trend. I don't remember how mad the second game soundtrack was on the single player, actually. It's been a while.
I remember it had a lot of it was remixes of the first game, but it did have some,
yeah,
it
maybe that's,
some really fun ones.
Maybe
in
that's
there.
Why it's not sticking with me as much.
Yeah. But yeah, the it's interesting how the story modes kind of evolved in that way.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's, again, it's something where it's like they didn't even necessarily need to add a single player to this multiplayer focused game. But I think, I mean, you know, again, there's so much to cover, but like there's the specific lore drops that people got really into,
yes,
as well.
Yes, the little scrolls that you can get in the single campaign, particularly,
yeah,
like some of them are the most wild things. Like,
yeah,
I mean, in the first game, that was how people figured out that it was a post-apocalyptic world, essentially. I don't think there was anything,
yeah,
else that really necessarily alluded to it prior to the single campaign, you know?
No, and it was like this sort of Planet of the Apes type twist where it was like the sea creatures had evolved to this point where they'd... It wasn't clear at that point, but it sort of seemed like they maybe like conquered humanity or something.
Yes, I know. People thought it was super dark.
Yeah, I think... I mean, Splatoon 3 expands on it in a way that I don't particularly want to spoil, but...
Yeah, that game's still a bit too new to
yeah,
want to say too much.
For sure, but... I think it's really fun that they actually kind of took those like weird edgy theories that people have. Like, there's a level in Kirby 64 which is like, it looks like planet Earth, but it's like kind of polluted. And you go there and it's like all these factories and stuff. And like people would like sort of theory crafted from there that it's like, oh, you know, Kirby's set far in the future. And you know, Planet Earth, some of these one places he goes to, and it's like Wally, he goes, mm-hmm, there and it's unrecognizable as Earth because it's, there's all this debris,
yep,
and stuff about. Yep. I find that kind of stuff interesting to a point. It obviously goes into like weird, like grimdark territory,
yeah,
but it's fun that maybe someone at Nintendo saw that sort of thing and was like, but we can do this, but like legit.
Yes.
We could do this with actual like storytelling,
I mean,
involved.
I wonder if it is a newer team. I wonder if maybe they did see that stuff and go, here's an idea. So there's all possibility that they did see that stuff and take inspiration.
Yeah, the interest in the lore was just one of the first big things I was hearing from friends that were interested in the games, and that really surprised me again.
It's just funny because it's the kiddie shooter.
Yeah.
And you just don't expect it to be like post-apocalyptic. It's kind of like the same sort of ethos as Adventure Time, where it's this bright, colorful,
yes,
world, and but it's grown from the apocalypse,
yeah,
essentially.
Yeah, I didn't think about that before, but as you were saying it, I was like, oh yeah, no, totally. It's totally like Adventure Time. Yeah, I'm intrigued to see where they go next with the series, because aside from the campaign, 3 didn't quite hit for me.
Yeah.
And I don't know if part of it is just not having the spare time I used to, or that it became a lot more technical,
yeah,
and sweaty, frankly.
Yeah, I mean, I still got an okay amount of mileage out of Salmon Run, which we haven't even talked about, but...
Yeah.
That's... one of the modes they brought in the second game that was such a game changer.
Because that was PvE, because in the first two games you couldn't be on the same team with a friend.
Yeah.
Or you couldn't guarantee it, at least.
You couldn't.
You could matchmake together.
And you still couldn't do it in the second game.
And I remember specifically joking with you, oh, they're not going to patch it in, they're going to wait till the third game to do it.
And
then
it
lo and
true.
Behold, they put it in 3, and that's one of the big selling features, being able to be on the same team consistently.
Yeah.
But yeah, Salmon Run is the big PvE mode. Me and you and our group of friends definitely got a lot of mileage out of that, and I think that is one of the secret sources of Splatoon, that makes it so fun. Because it's this sort of, you know, it's this horde mode with these quite short rounds that gradually ratchet up in difficulty.
And especially, like, as you
level up.
As you level up, it gets harder and harder. And there's some crazy footage online of people, like, on, like, level 300.
Oh my god.
Executive VP level, where it's just
bonkers.
Impossible to know what you would do.
Yeah.
You don't understand how these people are doing what they're doing.
Yeah.
And they still get like crazy scores as well.
Salmon Run's definitely like a big favorite. But yeah, I do just wonder like where they go with it next, because they've spent a long time iterating and they've done these interesting side experiences. I wonder if some kind of spin-off or something might be the tonic, but I don't know. There's a lot to do with this series, and that's exciting in a way.
Yeah, I personally, the thing that really bugs me about Splatoon, I guess, is that I've come to terms with the fact that I am not really a PvP kind of game player. And unfortunately, that is Splatoon's like main bread and butter, is that it is a PvP game. Like, there's just no avoiding it, which is a shame, because there's only so long, at least for me, that I could play Salmon Run and be happy with it, and there's only so many times I can play the single player and be happy with it.
Yeah, when such a big part of it is dedicated to the competitive experience, that's tricky, because you don't necessarily want to take that away from people, because people build communities around that.
But it would be nice if there could be, like, even a branching path.
Another flavor of it, maybe.
Where they have the PvP-focused game, even, and then a spin-off that's slightly less PvP-focused, maybe, is sort of its own thing.
Yeah, perhaps.
Don't know. It's a fun universe, and I'd love to see them do a bit more with it.
Yeah. Me too. But yeah, I suppose that wraps up the segment in a way. There was a lot more like to that than I was expecting. I had a fair amount of notes too, to be fair, but yeah.
I had none, so I just assumed you'd have loads. Oh, and yeah. I was like, Stav will do it.
I had some guiding threads in terms of the single player and stuff, but yeah, it was one of those things where it's like when I research and I see branching paths come up and I'm like, oh, I want to go down that one.
Yep. I know what, I'm familiar with you and your sort of ability to hone in on stuff, and I was like, I don't think I need to do research on this. I think Sam has this covered.
Yeah,
I'll just rely on memory and potentially misquote things, but it's fine.
Yeah. It happens. I do like making my connections. And speaking of connections, where can we find you on socials, I guess, Kit, if you do want to plug anything?
Oh, you see, this is difficult for me right now, because I'm in a weird in-between phase with socials. I mean, you can find me on Tumblr. I don't know if I want to give that tag away though.
No, that's totally fair. If you're hermiting, that's fine.
I'm a little bit of a hermit, but I'm trying to get back into the social media game. Maybe I'll be on in a future episode and I'll actually have some things to shill at that point. I do digital art, but again, I'm in a weird sort of in-between phase with all that, trying to figure it out. So
yeah, no, I feel you on that. When I went on Podster a few years back, like, you know, we got to the plug section and I was like, I don't know, I have a Twitter account. I don't have any projects in the works or anything.
Yeah, part of me just wants to be like, I have all these dead social media channels that I haven't posted on in at least 3 years.
You can find the authentic 2017 Splatoon 2 reactions in there.
Oh my god.
You can probably find Kit's Miiverse somehow. It's probably in internet archive.
You probably could. Oh my god. Me.
But David, where can people find you on the socials?
Before we do that, it's kind of crazy that we both knew the person who made bad Miiverse posts.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, we didn't get a chance to talk about that. Yeah. The God, this feels like clout chasing almost, but like the admin of Bad Miiverse posts was in the same sort of Nintendo fan community as us. and
a legend.
Yeah, super nice guy. Mm-hmm. But like, it was crazy watching his account blow up, especially the water guy, the guy that would like,
yes, that would rate water
1985 or whatever. I mean, that was the real life Octo G123. That was like some older guy from like Germany or something that yeah really liked water.
Mm-hmm. But in terms of socials, I am going to steal some handles I've been freed up. For example, Big Finish Productions have lost their Twitter account, so I'm now at Big Finish. I'm taking that account from them. They can pay me for it if they want.
Lock it in.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, I'm making box sets of British sci-fi from the 70s now, you know?
I do hear at Willy's Chocolate Experience is opening up, mm-hmm, as well.
Thunderbirds versus I don't know, fucking Inklings and Doc Ock. That's coming out, I don't know. References. At FEWBAT.
Fantastic. And I'm at Sammy_Crow. Our general account is at GamerEraPodcast. You can find us on Twitter. You can find us on Blue Sky if we are, mm-hmm, still posting there. I think we need to find out a good way to cross post from the Twitter account, because we kind of have just... We both tried to leap onto Blue Sky, and then unfortunately, yeah, Nobody's really there. So we went back on Twitter, and then... Yeah, hi, man. Too much to say about that platform. Mm-hmm. We'll also be posting the games that we talked about on our backlogged.
If I remember to hit publish on those lists, because I've forgotten quite too many times recently.
I think it totals maybe 4 games this time, so we might be saved. yeah, 4 games. Thank you for joining us on this wonderful episode. And as we always say, keep gaming!
Didn't you do well?
We did do well.